Sean, Alex Ovechkin keeps scoring goals, and I think some of us thought maybe he would stop because he wasn't scoring that many goals earlier this season. I'm guilty of it, I think, and I'm like tisk-tisking myself. Are you?
You should tisk-tisk yourself, but I never look back, Dan. I always look forward, and that's my way of saying I believe Ovi was washed up as well, and he's proven us both wrong, as well as a lot of other people. 30 goals, as many times as he's done it, it is absolutely mind-boggling. And the fact that he's put this hot streak together at the most important time of the season for the Washington Capitals makes it all the more impressive, right? He's not doing this in garbage time when people don't care and things come a little bit easier. He's doing this in the middle of a dogfight for a playoff position in the Eastern Conference where there's still five teams left and every game is a huge game. You look at the goal he scored last night, right? It's in a huge, huge game, a game that they needed against Detroit, and he comes up big for his team, and now they're in one of the driver's seats again and in an Eastern race and a wild card race and a Metro race that nobody seems to want to put their foot on the throat of everybody else.
Well, I don't know about that. The New York Islanders are starting to do that a little bit, and we'll get to that in a sec. But I think we got to give Ovechkin a little bit more of his due here. 18-30 goal seasons, and he had 8 goals in the first 43 games this season, and now 22 in his last 32. So it is really an impressive run. And he's asked, like, how are you doing this and all that. I don't it's a great question because there could be an analytical answer to what he's doing now. Did he change his stick? Did he change the way he's moving around? Has he changed his look? All these things, like, has he analyzed why he wasn't scoring? All these things. And you want him to stand up on a step stool with a bullhorn and just scream, I'm doing this because I'm Alex Ovechkin, all right? And I score goals for a living, and that's what I do, and I'm doing it right now. But your point is well taken. He's doing it in the middle of a race here. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and I'm going to give you a lot of credit here, Sean, that you said, watch these teams, the Penguins, the Capitals, the Islanders, the teams with recent playoff success, guys who have been around, they rise to the occasion because they're the teams that know how to do it. Whereas a team like the Philadelphia Flyers and maybe even the Detroit Red Wings, even though they're not a young team, they're a veteran team, haven't been around long enough together as a group, don't have the pedigree that these other teams have, they may struggle. Well, look at the Flyers, look at the Red Wings a little bit now, and now you take a look at the Penguins, and you take a look at the Caps, and the Caps needed that one against the Red Wings because they were starting to fall off a little bit, and Charlie Lindgren was great in that game, but you need your goalie to be great. And you take a look at the Islanders who have won 5 in a row. These teams with recent playoff successes are rising to the occasion in a race here that no one seems to have wanted for a long time. And so, Sean, I'm giving you credit for that statement, but I will say the New York Islanders look like a team that wants it now.
I love when you give me credit. And I deserve all the credit in the world, always. I will say the one thing I've noticed about Ovi and you talk about analytics and everything else, and you talked about movement. He is moving. He's not in the office anymore. Like, that's not where his goals are coming from. Some of them are, but sometimes he's, especially on the power play, he's on the top, playing the point. He moves around. I think he's harder to defend, and it's surprising because when he was in his prime, he never moved. When he was full of vim and vigor. And now he's older, like you and I, Dan. I don't have as much vim and vigor as I once did. Now he's moving around. When I want to just sit in the recliner and watch games, he's decided that he's going to wander all around the ice and shoot from different places instead of standing in one spot. And I think it's made him more dangerous.
I have some vim, lacking on the vigor, I think. But I don't even know what those things are. By the way, before we go on, Daryl Ray, Razor, the guy
who has vim and vigor.
He has a lot of vim and vigor, and he's got the best vocabulary in the National Hockey League. He's going to join us here in a little while. We'll talk Dallas Stars with him. The Stars have been, they're arguably the best team in the league right now with the way they're playing, 15 wins in their last 18 games. So we'll get into all of that with Razor in a little while, but a little bit more here.
I got to interrupt you for 1 second. We had a good argument last week about Sidney Crosby and Mario Lemieux and who was the ultimate Penguin. Yeah. You just brought up Daryl and his vocabulary. Razor or Doc?
Ooh. Oh, man. I gotta have to go with Doc on this one. Doc calls the game, right? And I wish he was still calling the games. No offense to everybody else calling the games. We have a lot of good broadcasters, national broadcasters, but nobody has ever done it like Doc. And he has to talk a lot more than the color guy. And Razor's the color guy in Dallas, next to Josh Bogart. And like, Doc had to talk more, and his vocabulary is incredible. He's the best that's ever done it, arguably the best that's ever done it in any sport. So I got to give you Doc, and I don't think you're going to disagree.
I'm not, but I'm a big SAT vocabulary guy, and Daryl sends me to the dictionary all the time.
Yeah.
Like, Doc has a lot of words, but I know what all of them mean, but everyone is perfect for the moment in the game that he said it. But Daryl sends me to the online dictionary once every two or three games.
That is true. But nobody said pitchforked it up the ice like Doc. I mean, come on. The best. But listen, and he, I wish he was still around. Let's go back to the East here a little bit. So we got Ovechkin. Let's dive into the New York Islanders, okay? Because the New York Islanders, I thought were dead. I did. I thought they were dead. And now, not necessarily behind Ilya Sorokin, but behind Semyon Varlamov, they've come back to life. They've won five in a row, and they are sitting pretty solid, as solid as one can be at the bottom of this East race, in third place in the Metropolitan Division right now, with Semyon Varlamov 5-1 with a .939 save percentage and a .217 goals against in his last six starts. He started five of the last seven games. It is actually remarkable what they've done here with Varley instead of Sorokin. And it's not to knock Sorokin. Sorokin's got a couple starts in. He's allowed six goals on his last 75 shots. Won two games, right? But Varlamov has just been terrific. I got to give the Islanders a lot of credit here. They look like the team. They go out and they beat the New York Rangers, right? I mean, that was a spicy one, too, against the Rangers, too. That was a little fun. Would be great if those two teams would match up in the first round or any round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We haven't seen that in forever, and it would be a great series just for, you know, the spiciness of it. But I got to give the Islanders credit here because it didn't look like a team wanted it for a while here, and now the Islanders have jumped ahead with five wins in a row at the right time. They've gotten hot at the right time. Are they this good? I don't know, but they've gotten hot at the right time, whereas some other teams have gone cold.
Let me ask you this, Dan. What happened the last time the New York Islanders won five or more games in a row?
Well, they dropped five in a row probably right after that.
Six,
yeah.
And they won't do that this time because there's not six games left.
That's true.
But I'm not sold. Still, I'm not sold. And look, they looked great last night against the Rangers, who are the class of the league and haven't taken their foot off the gas at all, despite being in the driver's seat for the President's Trophy and for the division and for everything else. They've played hard. They played hard against a Montreal team that had nothing to play for. You know, when you thought that might be a letdown game, they didn't let down. I don't think they let down last night. I thought that the Islanders took it to them, especially in the first period, and then they held on a little bit and survived. But the New York Islanders are way, way too inconsistent for my liking.
Yeah. Well, listen, and I understand that. And you look at what they have remaining, right? So Thursday night, they play the Montreal Canadiens. That's at home. It's got to be a win. It absolutely has to be a win for them. The Canadiens have not quit. I watched them against the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. They're still playing hard, okay? Not that I would expect any team to quit. But you know what I mean by that. They're still going out and trying to play hard and set the culture, continue to set the culture there in Montreal. So it's not going to be an easy game, but the Islanders got to win that one. Saturday afternoon, they're at Madison Square Garden. What a game that's going to be here. That's going to be a terrific one. The Rangers still have something to play for. They're 3 points up on the Hurricanes for first place in the Metro. They're 3 points up on the Bruins for first in the conference. Forget about the President's Trophy. It's first in the conference that they want because, if you finish first in your division but you're second in the conference, you win a date with the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the playoffs. And you want to avoid that if you can avoid it, right? You want to keep them on the other side. So the Rangers still have something to play for. They play the Flyers on Thursday. That's going to be a big one, I think, for both teams. And then the Islanders have the Devils on Monday, and they close it out Wednesday, a week from today, against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that could be a huge game. So there's a lot here. And yes, I think the Islanders can be very inconsistent. And no, I'm not sold. I'm not sold, okay? Because how could I be? Because like you just said, the last time they won five in a row, they dropped six in a row. It's what they've done. They're a hot and cold team. But with so much on the line, I got to think that they got to find a way to win against Montreal. They got to find a way to win against New Jersey. And to be honest, if they find one more point in the mix of all of that, it might be enough to get them in.
So the Philadelphia Flyers thought that Montreal was a W. It was 9-3.
Yeah. They shouldn't have. The Philadelphia Flyers, and listen, they're cooked. All right? I mean, can we agree on that? That they just look like a team that it just has nothing left. That they were an impressive, above-expectation team for about 73, 74 games. And now they've just completely run out of gas. They've got nothing left. They're getting blown out by Columbus. They're getting blown out by Montreal. And Torts has played the hard route with them. He's played the blame game with himself, not any of the players. He's played the blame game with some players, scratching Sean Couturier like he has without explaining it. He's gone easy on them, a little bit softer on them. It's not working. They're a team that just looks fried right now. I'm curious to see what they have when they come into Madison Square Garden Thursday night, because the Rangers are coming off of a loss, and the Rangers, like I say, and they still have something to play for here, and they want it. They want to win the division. They want to finish first in the conference. I've talked to the guys about it, and the Flyers look like a team that's just got nothing left, Sean.
Heartbreak Hill caved them in.
Yeah,
we talked about it last week, and we said that's what it was. It's like trying to finish the Boston Marathon, you know, and you're not an elite runner. You haven't done it before, and all of a sudden you get to that hill, and it breaks you, and they're broken. They can't get a save. They can't score a goal. Like, their defense is just a complete mess. I see no way back for them. So, but my only point being is that Montreal might be a little bit more dangerous than we're giving them credit for. And I think the Islanders have a lot of work left to do. There's no way that game on Saturday is going to play out like the game did last night. The Rangers will be in a different frame of mind. They're not happy about some of the things that happened in that game. You know, Peter Laviolette was very forthright in his displeasure after the game about the way that the Islanders played that game. I don't know that I agree, but everybody's allowed their opinion. But clearly, it will be a different game on Saturday. I can imagine that Pittsburgh game just being for everything, right? And that was the situation Pittsburgh was in last year, and they didn't do it. So they're going to be motivated this year to do it. It's certainly going to be a wild ride to the finish here in the East. Everything in the West, not so much. Maybe a little bit of seeding, but we know who's in and who's out. And now it's just jockeying for position.
Yeah, well, we'll get to the West soon. And again, we got Daryl Ray coming up here in a few minutes talking Dallas Stars hockey with us. The one other team we got to talk about in the East is the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's interesting, Sean, we just did this on NHL.com. You know, it was April 8th. It was 1 month from the trade deadline. It's the 1 month anniversary of the trade deadline. And who had made the biggest impact? I wrote Jake Guentzel because his impact on Carolina, I think, is unquestioned. You wrote Michael Bunting. I almost wrote Michael Bunting for that. I almost picked Bunting for that because his impact in Pittsburgh has been significant. He has produced for that team, and another team that looked completely dead, that looked like it was just going to play out the string here, and, well, they're not, right? I mean, they've found their way to get wins, points, and they're right in the thick of the race here. They've got four games left, but the schedule, Sean, the schedule for the Pittsburgh Penguins is hard. They do have their next three at home. Detroit, lot to play for. Boston, still got a lot to play for if they want first in the conference, right? Even in the division. Nashville, maybe not as much to play for, but never an easy game. I mean, Nashville clinched a playoff berth, and then they got the Islanders on the road. Not an easy schedule for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but they have four games left. And I wonder what the I don't know what the magic number is in the East to get in the playoffs. Like I said, the Islanders, if they get 5 points out of the last eight, it might be enough. That's 90 points. I'm sorry, that's 92 points for the New York Islanders, and I think that would definitely do. Probably at 91 is what gets you in, and the Penguins have 84. So they have a lot of work to do here, but I got to give them a lot of credit for finding a way to get back in this. It helps when a team like the Flyers, we all expected the Flyers might eventually drop. They did. The Red Wings haven't taken it for the wild card, so it opens up third, it opens up the wild card, and here are the Pittsburgh Penguins standing right there.
Yeah, and it's been their big guys, right, that have done it, and Bunting, and I think that was the thing. Everybody panned that trade when it was made. Oh, you gave Jake Guentzel away, right? How could you do that? Well, A, you had to because he was a free agent to be, and you're going to get nothing for him, so you might as well get something. And they got a functional player, you know, one that their GM, Kyle Dubas, knew well, and he's fit right in, and he's allowed them to kind of rebuild a little on the fly and still play meaningful games. Like the argument that you and I have always had, do you tear it down to the studs in Pittsburgh, or do you try and win because you owe it to those three guys who have given you so much, have given that franchise so much? And my argument has always been you need to try to win the whole time that they're there. You can never, ever set that threesome up to fail. They need to be respected. They need to have an opportunity to go out on a high. And that move, because of the way that Bunting's played, has allowed them to do that. And that's why I wrote, he's not the best player since the trade deadline. I think we all would say it's Guentzel. You know, Razor's going to talk a little bit about Chris Tanev, who was Mike Morial's pick. You know, there's other guys that are in there that certainly deserve credit. But to me, Bunting maybe has made the biggest impact on a team because that trade was a white flag and they didn't surrender.
That's not in their DNA. It's certainly not in Mike Sullivan's DNA. It's not in Sidney Crosby's DNA. They're 6-0-3 in their past nine games. Sidney Crosby has 7 goals and 10 assists in those games. Okay? Like, Sidney Crosby's driving this team, and he has. If they make the playoffs, he's going to drive them into the playoffs. Here's the problem. The problem with the Pittsburgh Penguins is if they make it, they might have run. They might not have anything left when they get there, okay? And whether they make it or they don't make it, they're still a stuck-in-the-middle team. Right now, the difference is they've gotten a bump with Michael Bunting, partly because Jake Guentzel wasn't playing for them. Like, they got a serviceable player who they could put in the lineup. Jake Guentzel was still out of the lineup at the time they traded him, and he hadn't played in a while. So they got a guy who can not only produce and goes to the net and finds pucks there and can score, he's an actual body they could use. So I think that has made a big difference as well. But yes, Malkin's played better. Brian Rust has been better. But my goodness, Sidney Crosby. And Nedeljkovic, let's give him a lot of credit. He's been good. Sidney Crosby's been out of this world. Listen, I don't think Sidney Crosby is in the Hart Trophy conversation, okay? Because this is an abnormal year. There's so many guys who've had balance of the season, better seasons, you know, in terms of numbers and whatnot from Sidney Crosby. So I don't think, in the end of the day, he will be a part of the Hart Trophy conversation, at least not the top four or top five. But we can certainly talk about most valuable player to his team, the definition of the award. I think you can at least say that Sidney Crosby has had that type of a season if they get in. It's just that with Kucherov and MacKinnon and McDavid and Panarin and Matthews, you know, and Pasternak, like, I mean, there's just too many guys.
I don't agree in the least. My vote for NHL.com's trophy tracker, which will run next week, is due today. Today's the deadline.
You going to vote for Crosby?
It's my deadline, and I still haven't filed mine, but that's part of the benefit of being the guy in charge. Crosby's going to be in my top five. He could be as high as three. What he's done is incredible. Incredible.
I can't see him as high as three. They're still a middling team. They're an
84-point
team. They're in the playoff race because it's a bad race.
They're in the playoff race because of Sidney Crosby.
Yes, but it's a bad race.
He has no control.
It's a bad race.
He has no control over that.
Well, listen, he doesn't, and you're right that they're in the playoff race because of Sidney Crosby, and I agree with you 100% on that. But they're in the they're not a very good team. But neither are Washington, neither's Detroit, neither's the Islanders, the Flyers. Like, these aren't very good teams. A couple of years ago, it took 100 points to get in the playoffs in the East. It's going to take 90 maybe this year. I mean, what a significant drop off there has been. We're talking about 84 points being in the playoff race. 84 points is a middling season, and they're in. They could make the playoff. I mean, he's had a terrific. He's driven them into it. No question about it. So you talk about valuable to his team, yes. But McDavid's driven the Oilers. Panarin's driven the Rangers. Pasternak's driven the Bruins. Matthews has 66 goals, for crying out loud. And that's, of course, Kucherov and MacKinnon are right there too. Like, what about JT Miller or Quinn Hughes or, you know, the in Vancouver, things like players like that. Like, Josh Morrissey gets no love for it. He's been terrific with the Winnipeg Jets, right? I mean, Roman Josi with Nashville. I'm not saying they're all better candidates than Crosby, but they're all doing the same thing, and they've driven their teams to be better too.
First of all, you can't name two guys from the same team and say they're an MVP.
Okay, fine.
That's the whole McDavid Draisaitl thing. Always my issue with
Quinn
McDavid.
Hughes, then.
Right? But if you have a B that you're still not naming, he can't be the A. Like, is there a B on the Penguins? No.
But that's why they're 20 points worse than a team like Vancouver.
What's Vancouver done in the last 20 games?
They've been okay. But
they've played 500 hockey.
Okay, what they did the first 55 games don't count. 56 games, they count. They've done a lot. They did a lot of good then to set themselves up to be like, hey, we're going to pace ourselves.
And look, they've done it because they've done what they've done lately because they don't have a goaltender with Demko being out. And hopefully he comes back this week. But to me, I can't discount what Crosby's done. And he hasn't done it alone. I would never suggest that. I think people that do say that are like, well, this is Sidney Crosby put him on his back and he's the only reason they're in the playoffs. He's not, or he's in a playoff position. He's not. You know, Ned has been a part of that. Other guys have been a part of that. But he is clearly driving the boat, and they are maybe in the bottom three or four in the East without him. Where is this Pittsburgh team without Sid?
Yeah, bottom three or four in the East. Instead, okay. They're in the, you know, okay, they're 10 or 9, maybe 8. Anyway, let's see where they finish. We'll talk about it again next week. Don't count me as this. I'm not saying Sidney Crosby's not having a really good season. All right? He's clearly the MVP of the Pittsburgh Penguins. There's just been better players than him this season. To put him at third, I think, is absurd. But anyway, that's me. Let's get to Darryl Rae.
Now I'm going to put him at third.
You should put him at third.
Because you said it's absurd, I'm going to put him at third.
You should.
And Darryl Rae, our guest, would like that because we just made a rhyme.
We did. The man with the best vocabulary in the NHL, Darryl Rae, joined us to talk about Dallas Stars hockey. Here's our interview with Razor. Razor, thanks so much for joining us. So we can see it. Sean and I can see it, but I got to point it out. Right behind you, you've got horns, and it looks you couldn't be more Texas right now. They look like they're coming out of your head. It's fantastic. What a look. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, I'm in the beat lab here. So they're not real. They're not real. I should have big longhorns, though, instead of that, but whatever. All good.
Well, listen, we'll jump into this here. It's a great look. You got a lot of goalie stuff behind you too, a lot of old hockey stuff too, which is great. So the Dallas Stars, here we are looking at this team. On February 29th, they were looking okay. Now they've won 15 of 18 games since February 29th. The leap year has been good to them. What's been the difference?
Probably a little better focus. You know, they went into the All-Star break, which I know is a little predating that, but where Pete DeBoer wanted a better concentration on their defensive game. And he did a deep dive during the break just to figure out where they were deficient in that area. and they came out of it and for the most part have backed that up. I mean, they've moved into the, I think in that span, the top five of NHL goals against, and that has not been the case this season. They always proved that they can score goals and they could outscore their problems or deficiencies defensively. And so that's in their back pocket all the time, but they understood if they're going to do anything serious in the spring, they're going to have to be a more well-rounded team and better defensively. And, you know, it's an interesting thing with the Stars, because it's not just defending in their own zone. They look at it more as, you know, hanging on to pucks up ice, what they do with the puck, you know, not turning it over. They were a little sloppy from time to time, and they'd end up chasing odd man rushes back into their own zone, kind of left their goaltending hung out to dry. And they've really tamped down on all of that. So, you know, you look at the entire rink, what is it, 17,000 square feet? They're good in every area.
The thing that amazed me as you're talking about that, like, look, this Dallas Stars team, we know who they are, right? There's a lot of veteran players on the team that everybody's familiar with. But for people who don't pay attention to this team, there's a lot of young blood that's been added into this team, you know, between Wyatt Johnson, Harley on the back line, Stankoven. Like, it's really hard with young players to do the things that you just said that Pete DeBoer is asking them to do. And I mentioned all those guys, and they've all had a huge part in this. They're not bit players.
No, very, very much so. And they have tremendous leadership here and good kids. You know, you sometimes you get the mix where you're either too moldy or too yeasty with your group. And the Stars are neither. They're older guys. They're still everyday contributors. You know, a guy like Joe Pavelski, even Ryan Suter, although his minutes have gone down a little bit, still plays every night. And both of them are pushing 40. And Ryan, you know, he just eats minutes and does the right thing over and over again. And then you flip over to the kids, and, you know, Wyatt Johnston has been incredible this year. He leads the team in goals. The other guy, Thomas Harley on defense, I think has made great strides. If you look at the hierarchy of this team, it's interesting to look at, because you have this really old veteran group, you know, guys, 1,400 games, 1,300 games, over 1,000 games. Tyler Seguin's approaching 1,000 games. Matt Duchene just played 1,000 games. So you have that group. And then you have sort of the mid-range, still young, but not as young as the others. And I put all the 2017s in there. Ottinger, Haskinen, Robertson. And then you add somebody like Roope Hintz to that group as well. So you have that group, and then you dip down and you have Stankoven, Wyatt Johnston, Harley. I mean, it's a pretty incredible kind of step after step, the way this thing is constructed right now. And they're all contributors. They're all expected to contribute. And I think the young guys have made strides, and the older veteran guys, you can see them sort of ramping their game up as the playoffs approach. They're quite a wagon right now.
You know, and what's interesting with that, so I was looking, again, going back to that date, February 29th, I think they played Winnipeg that night, and it's been really good. They were good before that, let's be honest. I mean, but they've been really good since then. The balance has been terrific, and the guy at the top of the scoring leaders in those last 18 games is Jamie Benn.
Yeah.
Jamie Benn's got 12 goals and 13 assists, 25 points in the last 18 games. What is it? And you just said the older guys are ramping it up. You'd think it'd be Roope. You'd think it'd be Robertson in that. And they're in the mix too, obviously. But what is it? What's Jamie been doing? What's his game looked like here?
Again, I go back to what I said in the beginning. Like, the main thing is focus. Like, he seems to have a myopic focus on making sure that he is leading by example, playing the right way, and preparing himself, and in doing that, preparing the team for the Stanley Cup playoffs. They understand that some of these guys aren't going to play till they're 50. So the window, you know, the window is wide open, and it's right there for them right now. And the seriousness that comes with that. And Jamie approaches it that way most of the time. anyway. And you couple that with the elevation of Stankoven from the American Hockey League when Dadonov was injured and Tyler Seguin was injured. Stankoven came up. They played 21 games together now. Stankoven, Wyatt Johnston, and Jamie, and it's just meshed. They play a style that is similar. All three guys are expected to hunt the puck and turn it over, and they'll hang on to the puck. And when you have a group that hangs on to the puck deep in the offensive zone, and Jamie Benn's a part of that line, that's his game. You know, it was when it was Sagan, him, and Radulov, or Sagan, him, and Nichushkin. It, you know, you look at those lines that he's played on, especially when he was really skipping along, and this one looks a lot like that. So that's part of it. The other part would be the power play. Like, he had almost zero impact on the Stars' power play from a goal-scoring standpoint for most of the season. And then in about that same time span you're speaking of, maybe expanded a little bit, he's refound his touch there, scored some power play goals, shooting the puck as well as I've seen him this season. And, it just seems to all be in place for him right now, the confidence that comes with that. And that line is the line-tipping trio for the Stars. As great as the top line with Hintz, Robertson, and Pavelski, Duchesne, Marchment, and Sagan really drove things for this team for much of the first half of the season. But if you look at it now, with that line, if you want to say they're coming out of the three hole, they're really difficult for most teams to try to match up against. So they get the advantage all the time. They spend almost all their shifts in the offensive zone. And I just another reason why the Stars look like a serious contender to win it all.
Yeah, there's been so many coaches that have been talked about this year that could be coach of the year, right? You look at it early on, it was Torts. Carberry's done such a good job with Washington. They're still in the playoff mix. Same thing with Lalonde. And then you got like Peter Laviolette leading the charge here. They've all been mentioned. And Peter kind of slides under the radar because he's been good for so long, right? He's brought so many teams to the conference final. What is it about him? You're around him every day that makes him such a good coach. Personally, I think he should be in that top five for the Adams for what he's done with all the young kids that he's had. But when you look at him and you break him down on a nightly basis, what is it that makes him such a good coach? Maybe for this team specifically.
Yeah, I mean, he should be. I agree with you. Like, I always look at him, and he's the personification of the old duck on the water, right? Like, it looks placid on the surface. Looks like there's not a lot of work going on, and yet the legs are just kicking underneath the water to propel him around. And when you look at Pete behind the bench, like, he's as stoic as any coach in the league. He stands back there with his hands in the pockets a lot. And a lot of the coaching is obviously done behind scenes, and that taking it all in. He's really bright, and he's not going to freak out on officials or anything else. And they make their adjustments between games, between periods, whatever. I don't know how many adjustments there are though, because I've always had great appreciation for those coaches that say, okay, this is the way we play, and you're going to know how we play, but you're not going to be able to do much about it because we're going to be so good at how we play that you can't match it and you can't handle it. And that was the Stars of the late 90s under Hitchcock, in a very different style. And it's very much how Pete DeBoer goes about it too, I think. They are firm in what their details are, and they're so good at it. Good luck to the other side. And they're deep. I found it amazing. Like, the Stars won their 50th game last night. That's the first time in his very illustrious coaching career that he's ever won 50 games. You know, they probably should have done it last year, but they couldn't win in overtime. They ended up with 47 victories at the end of the season. But, man, I have great appreciation for his professionalism and the style. Style's very modern. You know, they get giddy up out of their own zone and on the attack. And if you're going to just, I guess, distill it down to its simplest form, good offense is the best defense. And that's kind of how they go about it.
Chris Tanev has made an impact since he got to Dallas. Yeah. What is it? What do you think? What do you think the ingredient that he's added? How essential has it been for this team?
Puck movement. Then, like, again, a lot of things with this team and the way DeBoer wants them to play is predicated on how they get out of their own zone and how quickly they do. Like, there's not a lot of dusting the puck off and D to D and hinge and all that. I mean, it is on a stick and it's gone. And they have forwards flying the zone. So when you have somebody that can make a play, like everyone talked all the time, for good reason too, about Tanev's goal suppression and his shot blocking and that. And we've seen that. But he can move a puck. And he has a history of whatever partner he is playing with, usually there's a little bump in that player's offensive numbers a little. It hasn't quite manifested yet with Essel and Dell. They've been primarily partners, but you can see lots of what you're talking about. Like S is getting chances that he wasn't before. So you drop in a guy who's a right shot, which they really needed, who could move a puck, who's so good at closing on teams defensively and individuals, just giving them no room to do what they want to do. And then he'll eat a puck to win a game. But Jake Oettinger was telling me yesterday when I was asking him about him, and he's like, he cares about his goaltender more than maybe anybody he's ever played with, because he's like, what do you need? What do you want? What can I do to help you? You know, he's always thinking first about making sure that the other team doesn't score. But when he does get the puck, he can make a play. It's not just bang it off the glass and out of the zone. So he's been a perfect fit. And one of those guys, you know, you see it at forward a lot where a guy will go out of the lineup, real important player. All of a sudden, guys are playing above their weight and the lines don't look the same. And then you drop a guy in there again and everything seems to fall into place. And he's one of those individuals.
I'm curious, and you'd know better than me, I've been around Chris a little bit. To say he's a little bit of a wild card, I think, is a fair statement, and I mean that in the nicest possible terms. He's a loose player personality-wise. It doesn't seem to me that Dallas has a lot of those. We talked about the young kids, and then we talked about the veterans, who are somewhat serious, right, in a good way. And Chris is a very serious player, but he's also very funny, and he likes to be made fun of. He's loose. Like, how important is that to a team, to me, that seems like it's a little tight in its culture?
That is an excellent point. I agree wholeheartedly. Like, you need a little stupid cowboy in there somewhere, right? And
you need an idiot.
Yeah. And he's got a very dry sense of humor. He hasn't been here that long, so I think everybody's still trying to kind of get used to one another and understand and that. But yeah, I mean, he's got a warrior mentality, and I think he's really self-deprecating from the times I've talked to him. And they've got a very professional, quiet, you know, the sort of core heart of the team are these Finns. And you know what they're like, you know, with one another, they're all gregarious and everything, but they get outside of that and they're almost mute. They just work hard and play hockey, and it's tough to get a lot out of them. Their captain's that way. You know, Jamie isn't overboard gregarious and that. So, yeah, I think he adds a big element of that that's necessary around here.
We need an idiot on this podcast, too. That's why
we have two of them, Dan. We're constantly vying for who's the biggest idiot.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I want to ask you about two teams that, before we let you go, I want to ask you about two teams that Dallas has recently played here. They're contenders with them, Colorado and Edmonton. They beat them They beat Colorado 7-4. They beat Edmonton 5-0. I mean, is Dallas that much better than these two teams?
You know, the game against Edmonton, it was, for whatever reason, the Oilers top players get frustrated when they play Dallas. I don't know what it is, but they get really frustrated. Leon Draisaitl has as many penalty minutes as he does assists against the Stars in his career, which is, you know, goofy to even think of. Yeah. They just I whatever it is that the Stars have done, and it's under a couple of different coaches, really. It's in two very different systems. But they've struggled through the years to win against Dallas. They just have, and maybe that frustration or those losses have caused some of the frustration. In that game, it was a mismatch of decors. The Stars defense played phenomenal. And I don't know that the Oilers crew could play much worse than they did in that game. Like, it was just, it was a rancid outing. You know, Darnell Nurse had a very forgettable game in that one. He's better than what he showed. But the Stars have confidence that they can handle teams that like to live on the rush and on the power play. And they shut them down in that one and scored enough to win it going away. The game in Colorado, they hadn't beaten the Avalanche in the season series. And they had leads in every game. And the Avs just keep coming at you, especially their top end. This was the first time the Stars had seen Colorado since the trade deadline. And, you know, a different look to them with the additions they had. They're just a deeper, a little bit nastier team to play against. But in that one, for whatever reason, that, I mean, the Avs, I know they had a big game last night out of McKinnon to beat the Wild, but they were in a bit of a rut and not playing that great. They got smoked by Edmonton before the game against the Stars. And in that game, they lost Rantanen, which was a humongous omission on their side in a game like that. And you could see it, you know, a team that relies so heavily on their top end, and you pull him out of there, and they just didn't seem like the same club in that one. And the Stars' depth just owned the game. And it was, look, it wasn't an easy game. They played the day before in Chicago and lost. Maybe that was the best thing that could have happened. They got beat by Mrazek and the Blackhawks. And they were, look, there's no question they were overlooking the Hawks and looking forward to the meeting with the Avalanche and basically the Central Division on the line. And when they got into that game, their power play, which can be a major weapon, was, they went 3-for-3 on the power play. And that was really the biggest difference in the game that night. The previous games, for whatever reason, Stars would be up and they could not keep the Avalanche reined in. And I mean, they were up 3-0 in one game and lost 6-3. So what does it say about the potential matchup in the playoffs? I don't know, because both sides have kind of clobbered the other side in some ways. But if you look at the recent games the Stars have played against the big boys in the West, they annihilated the Oilers on home ice. They spanked Colorado pretty good in Denver when they flew in the day of a game because of a travel snafu. And then when they went into Vancouver, they beat the Canucks and throttled them pretty good. They didn't have Thatcher Demko, but still they played great. So they're in these big matchups late in the season, they've risen to the occasion, and that has to give them a little bit of confidence rolling into the postseason.
Yeah, I would assume they're going to be one of the true battleships of the playoffs this year, and the West is loaded with them. We're looking forward to seeing how it all plays out. We're looking forward to hearing your calls, and we really appreciate you joining us today on the podcast. Thanks a lot.
All right, you guys keep vying for idiot of the day, okay? You're 1-2 right now. You're neck and neck.
Neck and neck.
Enjoyed it.
All right. Sean, great stuff there with Razor. I will say one, we didn't talk to him at all about Jake Oettinger, who also has been terrific for the Dallas Stars in this run. And I keep going back to that date, February 29th. That's, you know, they stopped the losing streak there. They've started a hot streak. 15 of their last 18 games have been wins since then. And Oettinger in that stretch has won 12 of them, 909 save percentage, a 2.38 goals against, and two shutouts. It was a struggle for Jake Oettinger for a while this season. And I think part of the reason they were defensively deficient, as Razor talked about with DeBoer doing a breakdown of it around All-Star weekend, was the goalie wasn't making the saves that he was making last season. And now he is. For the most part, he's been really good. And Oettinger has been a big part of this. So top to bottom, I really love this Dallas Stars team with the way they're playing, and if the goalie can play this way too.
Yeah, it's a little chicken or egg. You know, is he making the saves because he's better, or is he making the saves because the Stars are better? you know, I'm not sure what the answer is. He certainly looks more confident, which is good for them. He looks more like the goalie, you know, who stole them some games in their deep runs in the playoffs. And you know, if you don't have a hot goalie going into the playoffs, you're in a lot of trouble. And I look at the Dallas Stars, and there's very few teams that I would say in the West have a better goalie than Jake Oettinger. And that's huge for as talented as they are. And I have to say, Darryl's a good salesman, because he sold me on the Stars a little bit more. I still think it's Colorado. Obviously, that win that Dallas had this week and the way that they were able to do it scares me a little bit in holding that opinion. But I do just playoff-tested, you know, dominating players. I think Colorado is the better team, but Oettinger is a better goalie than anything Colorado can put against him. You know, Georgiev, for all the wins he has, hasn't put up the numbers that Oettinger's putting up right now. So that scares me a little bit. And I honestly think that those two teams in the Central are probably the monsters in the West, right? Vancouver's been very middling for a month.
For a while now, yeah.
Part of it is without Thatcher Demko, who practiced this week and is hopefully coming back. But with a goalie and a lower body injury, you never have any idea how they're going to come back, what they're going to do. And let's not forget, Connor McDavid's dealing with an injury again now in Edmonton. You know, he's day-to-day with a lower body injury. They say it's not the same injury that bothered him at the beginning of the season when he was a mediocre player, missed a couple of games, and much like Alex Ovechkin, was struggling to a degree before he took off and became a huge part of this MVP race. And you know, carried Edmonton to crazy heights that they're at now, where, you know, the playoffs look like a pipe dream, and now, you know, they're already clinched and they're just fighting for position. So I really, as the days go by, this Dallas team is growing on me more and more.
Listen, I picked them to win the Stanley Cup the start of the year. I'm liking that pick a lot right now. I picked them to play against Carolina in the Stanley Cup final. That looks okay. Right? I mean, Carolina's looking really good right now. So toot my own horn a little bit there. But no, I really like Dallas. I do. Yeah.
Dan, you are the smartest hockey man that I know.
Appreciate that, Sean. Thank you very much.
You're not the idiot. I'm the idiot.
Not right now. Yes.
I'm the idiot with my absurd takes. But let me just mention this. As I mentioned to Darryl, every entity needs an idiot, because let's not forget, this is the 20-year anniversary of a bunch of idiots making history.
Yeah.
And that was the 2004 Red Sox. They celebrated yesterday, opening day in Fenway. All the idiots were back together, and it was awesome. So I'll live with being an idiot.
They only made history because they hadn't won the World Series in 1,000 years.
That's no, they only made history because they came back from 03.
Yeah, I know. And against the Yankees, so I'm all for it. So that's good. Hey, that was my favorite team at the time right then in that series. I'll tell you that much. Anyway, listen, one team we didn't mention right there, Winnipeg. What about Winnipeg, Sean? Like, I was asked a question in my mailbag this week of the four Canadian teams that are making the playoffs this year. Which one has the best chance to win the Stanley Cup? Be the first Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup since 1993. My answer is Winnipeg, and it's for two simple unquestioned reasons, if you ask me. They have the best goalie. Of the four teams, they have the best and most sure thing goalie. Obviously, the four teams are Winnipeg, Vancouver, Toronto, and Edmonton, right? They have the best goalie, Connor Hellebuck. They might have the best goalie going into the playoffs of any team in the playoffs, or at very least of any team in the Western Conference. They play the best 5-on-5 defense. They're allowing 1.5 goals per game at 5-on-5. So even if their penalty kill is not that great, if they keep up this 5-on-5 defense, they'll win a lot of games in the playoffs. And we know that the playoffs become more of a 5-on-5 game than a special teams game for the most part. Special teams still play a big role, but 5-on-5 is huge in the playoffs. And the Winnipeg Jets are the best 5-on-5 team right now in the league, 117 goals against at 5-on-5. So, yeah, I actually will tell you that I think the Winnipeg Jets have a better chance than a team like the Colorado Avalanche. And that will be a first-round matchup, and I probably would pick the Winnipeg Jets to win that series. Connor Hellebuck makes the big difference. Their defense makes the big difference. One thing they got to do is they got to find a way to slow down a guy who is impossible to slow down. and Nathan MacKinnon. But if you can at least limit that, let him score the 1.5 5-on-5 goals per game and then stop everybody else, you can win. But MacKinnon, Sean, proved in their game against the Minnesota Wild on Tuesday night why he is the Hart Trophy winner this season. He absolutely took over that game and did things that no one else can do.
Well, I agree with that. And I also agree with Winnipeg being the best Canadian team, or the best chance to win a Stanley Cup among the Canadian teams, which means that the streak is going to continue of no Canadian teams winning the Cup, because I don't believe, as good as the Winnipeg Jets are, that they're a Stanley Cup champion. I don't believe they're of that caliber. And I find it humorous that you think that they can beat Colorado when you just talked about their inability to play penalty kill.
Well, it's not an inability to play
penalty. When you have to go up against that power play. And you just talked about how good Nathan MacKinnon is.
Yeah, like, he's really good.
Yeah. So that series might be a pick 'em, but I don't think I can pick Winnipeg.
All right. Listen, I don't like the Avalanche goaltending situation right now. It's throwing me off for the Avalanche in general, to be honest with you. It really is. It's a detriment to them right now. Maybe it becomes a plus, but I'll give you another important factor in this too, Sean. The penalty kill for the Winnipeg Jets is about 78%. But they have had among teams going that we know for sure that are going to the playoffs right now, let's just say in the West, right? Vegas is going to make the playoffs. They're second fewest in shorthanded total times shorthanded, right? So they're not a penalty-based team. Vegas has fewer shorthanded fewer times on the penalty kill than Winnipeg does. Then there's Winnipeg among the other teams in the West. They don't go on the PK a ton. They're not great on it, but they do limit their penalties. They're a disciplined team. So I don't know that they're Stanley Cup ready, but with the defense, well, the goaltending I see from Colorado, that doesn't look to me like it's Stanley Cup ready either. Now, I probably was thinking the same thing in 2022 when they had Darcy Kemper in net, and they went out and they won the Stanley Cup with Darcy Kemper in net. So anything can happen for sure. But I think I'm going to pull the upset special there and pick Winnipeg to beat Colorado in that series if it happens.
Well, I think we'll be getting to our picks next week. Bob Bender, our producer, would know better, but we're looking at the end of the season soon and the playoffs starting after that. So I'd assume next week is the big pick-a-palooza. So we'll return to this. But the other point that you were making, and I think you were trying to segue into an MVP conversation, aside from my crazy Sidney Crosby.
I was poorly segueing.
Yeah, and aside from my Sidney Crosby craziness in the first segment, I think you were trying to swing into an MVP conversation, and you emphatically stated that MacKinnon is the MVP. And I don't know how much of a segment we can have, because I emphatically believe that Nathan MacKinnon is the MVP as well. Although, watching Kucherov this weekend in that game against Pittsburgh, I'm like, that guy can do anything he wants. He's the MVP. And he does have like 52 points more than Braden Point, I want to say, which is just bazonkers. But I still think Nathan MacKinnon is more valuable.
He takes over a game, right? I mean, Kucherov's an artist. And maybe nobody does it better.
He needs help. He needs help to take over a game.
Yes, that's exactly right. MacKinnon, what he did against Minnesota, is a perfect example of why he doesn't need help. It's the burst of acceleration. Before the burst of acceleration, it's reading the play, where the puck is going, to know that he can have his burst. He gets his burst. The puck gets to him, and he's gone. You can't stop him. And not just is he gone, he's not flying. Remember Michael Grabner used to get tons of breakaways, right? And he was flying up and down the ice. He would never score on him because he had no finish or any ability. It's not. MacKinnon is flying up and down the ice. He gets the puck. He busts through defensemen. And then he's got a perfect finish. He's got a great finishing touch to him as well. It's unstoppable. And It's the way he takes over games. Your point is spot on. Kucherov, as great as he is, and my God, is he great, he needs help to take over a game because he's an artist. He's passing the puck. He's looking for guys. His pass to Stamkos last night for a one-timer across the ice, perfect. His pass to Braden Point, blind almost, spinning in the offensive zone, right on his stick, perfect. But those are moments that the artistry comes out. McKinnon's a wrecking ball, and he wrecks games. It's just the way he does it, and that's why I think he's the guy. I understand the Kucherov part of the debate, and it seems like you want to it seems like a knock on Kucherov. It's not. It's just that this guy McKinnon is doing things right now that nobody else is doing, and that's why he's the guy for me.
He's a one-man show, so we can't argue about this. But I think I found something that we can maybe have a little debate about.
Okay.
So Kucherov's in the MVP conversation. McDavid's in the MVP conversation. Each of them could have 100 assists before the season's over.
Well, yes, both of them. Yeah.
Yes, each of them.
That's Kucherov is four away. McDavid, one away.
Yeah, so Kucherov can do that in one game. He's had multiple three-assist games in the last week. And each of them is the proper grammatical way to do it. But here's my question for you. 100 assists or 70 goals, which is what Austin Matthews is coming up on. He scored number 66 last night against the New Jersey Devils, who blew another lead, by the way. Not that it matters anymore because they're out, but I've never seen a team blow that many leads. But anyways, 66 goals. He's got an outside chance at 70. 66 is the most since Ovechkin scored 65. Which one's more impressive, 70 goals or 100 assists?
70 goals.
Then we can have an argument.
Okay. So I say 70 goals is more impressive because goal scoring in general might be the hardest thing to do in the game. Okay? And if you're going to be able to do it, we've had this conversation before. If you can do it 70 times in an 82-game season, it's a remarkable achievement. Now, 100 assists is terrific, but how many of those are secondary assists? How many of those are the play before the play? When you get the puck from the guy who's getting the assist, you still have to put it into a small area to get it past an elite goaltender. And every single one of the goaltenders in the National Hockey League is elite. And you have to find very small space every single time to put it in unless it's an empty net goal, right? And Austin Matthews does it on a routine basis. His shot, his release is the best in the game. Maybe the best in the league since Brendan Shanahan's release, right? And Shanahan had an unreal release. And to do it 70 times, Sean, to put that puck into a very small opening and find the hole, it's incredible. So it's 70 assists, it's 70 goals, because how many of those assists are secondary, the play before the play?
It doesn't matter if primary or secondary. Here's the reason why the assists are more unbelievable to me. First, look at the assist totals for this season. McDavid has 99. Kucherov has 96. Nathan MacKinnon, who's going to be the MVP, has 86. Then it's Quinn Hughes at 71, Panarin at 70. You're talking about 29 assists. That's almost 25% more assists that these guys are scoring than other unbelievably elite players. And the only people that have ever done it in the game are Mario, Wayne, and Bobby Orr. When did those guys play?
Yeah, I understand.
Where's the modern guy that's done that? Where's the guy who's been playing 4 to 3 games, put up 100 assists? He doesn't exist.
All right.
This has never been seen in the game that we know. Not the game that we've watched in highlights and we've studied and maybe we remember as little kids, because I'm an old man and I do remember some of that. In the game that we have embraced and we've watched since we were old enough to understand it and break it down, where's that guy? Brett Hull never did it. Adam Oates never did it. Brett Hull is a bad example. I was thinking of Adam Oates.
Yeah, I understand.
They never did it. They were the greatest passers we've ever seen. They never did it. In an era when there were 13 goals scored a game.
All right. Yes, it's remarkable. I'm going to throw this. We have, before we end this, I'm going to throw this one thing out at you as well. Why 70 is more impressive. And it's not even the number 70. It's the number 50. Auston Matthews, his next even strength goal will be his 50th even strength goal of this season. He's not doing it on the power play as much. He's doing it at even strength more than anything. And the last guy to score 50 even strength goals was Timo Solani in 92-93. Gretzky did it a few times. Phil Esposito. So you're talking about 100 assists and how few guys have done it. I'm going to give you that number, 50 even strength goals in a season. And that'll get Matthews to 70. It could get him to 70, right? So I think it's 70. It's the hardest thing to do. You think it's 100 assists. Absurd again. But, you know, I mean, it's the way it goes sometimes. I'm right a lot in this episode.
You're right a lot always. That's what I've learned in all of this, is that you're right and then things happen and I'm right. So you're right beforehand and then they actually play the games that we've talked about and I'm right. In the rearview mirror. And even you go back and play the start of this. Sean, I have to give you credit again. You were 100% right. And by the way, the Nashville Predators qualified for the playoffs this week.
Our producer is just going to clip the part where Sean says, "You are right, Dan." That's all I want to hear. Listen, this was a lot of fun.
He's going to put it up on X too, just so we can feed your ego.
All right, stop talking. This was a lot of fun. Razor was great. We've got very little time left in this regular season. This East race is really good. The President's Trophy race, first place on the line in a few divisions as well. We'll talk again next week. Enjoy the hockey.